Welcome to Digital Health Talks. Each week, we meet with the healthcare leaders making an immeasurable difference in equity, access, and quality. Hear about what tech is worth investing in and what isn't as we focus on the innovations that deliver. Join Megan Antonelli, Janae Sharp, and Shahid Shah for a weekly No BS deep dive on what's really making an impact in healthcare.
Hi, I'm Janae Sharp, founder of Sharp Index. I'm sitting down with Megan Antonelli and Chris Slocum, and they are two powerhouse female founders. We get to talk about a book today that Chris has written called Stop Starvation Marketing, 23 Power Growth Moves for Health Tech, IT, and Biotech Companies. And this book published in January, everyone should get a copy. And I'm really looking forward to hearing your industry perspectives and knowledge and how they relate to the state of healthcare IT today. I'd love if you could introduce yourself to our audience and talk a little bit about your book.
Absolutely. Thank you, Danae. And nice to be here, Megan. I'm happy to be here with your audience. I am Chris Slocum. I'm the Chief Growth Officer of a company called Supreme Optimization, which many folks in your audience may know me from ClarityQuest. I founded a marketing agency that focused on health tech and biotech about 23 years ago. And last year, we sold and joined Supreme Group, which is the number one life sciences digital agency in the world. And so together, we're kind of the first full stack marketing agency for health tech, med device, and biotech. And I'm really enjoying the ride and leading sales for the holding company.
I love that. It's such an emerging market and such a need to bring those things together. I thought we could start with talking about the latest events, of course, because those are top of mind right now. And it relates also to your book. One of the people that we interviewed, we have a little podcast. So we interviewed people at the health conference and at HIMSS, and we met Mike McSherry. And I noticed that he was in your book when I was reading it. So I thought we could start with that. Let's talk about maybe his story, but also like how that relates to this work.
Yeah.
Transition. Let's talk about if you liked HIMSS and health or not. Did you like it? Yes. No.
So I can't comment on HIMSS. I heard about it, but I wasn't personally there, but I was at Vibe, and it was our first time exhibiting at Vibe. And I thought it was a really good vibe at Vibe, right? There was a lot of interaction. It was high tempo, and it was a great audience for us, actually. Great ROI so far as an agency there in talking to a lot of our prospective customers. But I also heard from health systems, from clinicians, from the software vendors themselves, that there was a lot of interaction this year and that the tone had changed from other years to be much more positive. I think we're coming out of the doldrums, which is a good thing. Yay.
Yeah, that's good. We need that.
Yeah. And so for companies like Zelle and Mike McSherry, the CEO there, you have to really tell a unique story. And I know that sounds cliche, but you have to tell a unique story in a way that fits with your point of view, right? And in the book, we highlight an example of how Zelle, along with ClarityQuest, came up with an idea to really set them apart for top of funnel leads, which is your hospital the next blockbuster video? In an ad that had like an old VHS tape in it, was yellow, not the traditional blue-green healthcare, which really made them stand out. And it had immense interaction. Actually, we launched that campaign over the December-January holiday period. And we had like CIOs, CFOs, COOs, CMOs flooding in and downloading that piece of content in January 1st through the 3rd of that year. So like people were like, oh, I would never put up an ad during that time period. But no, you're wrong. You should. They're not in meetings. They're checking things out. And they saw a piece of content that was like, oh my gosh, yeah, I'm feeling this pain. I got red all over my balance sheet. I got to make sure that our hospital doesn't go under, because most people in healthcare, A, want to see it succeed. It's very important to all of us. They're altruistic. They want to make sure they can care for their patient base, and they want to have a thriving business as well, so we can keep employing people and treating patients well.
Yes. It's nice to be able to capture that feeling with a viral meme.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And something totally out of the box. There's a lot of ads if we're looking at LinkedIn or we're looking at Google or even paid media, even earned media. And it's so darn boring. We see it every day. Right? And in highly regulated industries, I understand why we get to that point. But I think our job in marketing is to push the envelope quite a bit. And then come back maybe just a little bit if legal or regulatory says, no, you can't push it that far. But if you start in the middle, you're going to end up with meh, I like to say. Middle goes to meh. If you start like really aggressive, creative, then you're still going to end up with something that's probably pretty interesting. That's not going to get you in trouble. That's not going to be a legal problem, but it's going to make you stand out.
Right. Well, that's great. I mean, I think in healthcare, sometimes marketing is a little... what can be a bad word? And they lean towards academic, they lean towards what's known. So that is a great point. In terms of what you saw at Vibe, I mean, that Zelf is a pretty mature digital company at this point. There were so many startups. So what are your thoughts on that right now as we kind of come out of, as you said, coming out of the doldrums and there's more exuberance in the field, but what are we seeing in terms of kind of marketing and even the reality of what they're providing?
Yes, I was really enthused actually by a few women and minority-led companies that I met, many more than I've seen in the past. I met a young woman who had a chronic disease and developed a platform in order to address that. First diagnose it, which was really tough, and then address it. And so I think that is fabulous that we see women and people of color in their 30s that are now getting involved in this because they're like, there's not something to address my particular issue within this healthcare ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, we've heard health equity and that's awesome. But now we're seeing like really particular point solutions. The problem is the money is tougher to get these days, right? And I was heartened to find some of these people and talk to them, and disheartened by some of the female founders that I met and said, the only people who met with me at Vibe were other women in PE or VC. I didn't get like a single man to take my meeting.
That's shocking.
That is shocking because they've shown that women founded companies are far more successful. In there. So I think that's still a dynamic that we have to change. I'm seeing positives and we're seeing more women.
See, I'm at Health will listen to this so that we can tell them here's something you could do. Like that's super important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Health and Vibe getting a lot of money people to the floor is awesome, but they have to make sure, I think, to be representative in meeting with all the potential founders out there that are available. And when we get to that point of money equity, there's health equity and there's money equity. When those two come together, we're going to get the best patient outcomes, actually, because we're going to have all points of view represented.
Well, I think that's actually relating to your expertise as well, if you think about it. Because like marketing, sometimes you have this messaging and it doesn't always match the product, right? Like, and even in the book discusses that, like the investment we make in the messaging versus the investment in the product and how we strike that balance. So how do people strike that balance? Because it looks like we're going in the right direction, but the data isn't supporting that we're quite there yet. And then moving from that, how do founders look at that and look at the messaging and not getting caught up in that hype cycle?
Yeah.
Actually delivering on the promise of what they wanted on their dream.
Yeah. So in my book, there's what's called the Tower of Power. Right? At the very
moment, we're going to have to get that to share with everybody.
Yes. The Tower of Power is our methodology that we've worked with hundreds of companies on. And if they follow this, they've pretty much all succeeded. But it's starting out with that messaging of who you are. What are your brand promises? What do you promise to others? Are you consistent in that promise? Like you said, don't getting involved in the hype cycle just because something is sexy. Like everyone with the AI bandwagon, right? Like this year it was like, I have AI, even if they didn't. And then people are like, tune it out.
Because they didn't learn from IBM.
They didn't learn that. And it wasn't genuine to everyone. I think it's fine to say like right now, we're still evaluating that. AI said, or we don't have something right now, but it's coming down in the roadmap. But here's what we do have today, because that's the reality for most people. But speaking in your genuine voice and developing a message and content that you're willing to sign your name to. Anne Hanley, I love her, of Everybody Writes, the book author, this week had an amazing newsletter where she said, put out content that you're willing to sign, whether that's signing your book, whether that's signing your podcast, like something genuine that AI can't create for you, that sets you apart. And that's what I didn't see a lot of at Vive. I saw some creative booths. I really liked Vinyl and their play on their name and giving out vinyl records. That was cute, memorable, right? And there, and there was some fun little things like that. But I didn't see a lot of people with a book, with a piece of content, with something that was really valuable to people that they could sign their name to and say, this is how we're standing out in the marketplace. This is how we're addressing patient needs. And I know we're going to talk about patient outcomes. Yeah. But really, what are we doing for you, health system A, B, or C? And how are we addressing the whole problem in the ecosystem right now?
Right. Well, and as you said, I think it comes down to you have the communication and the activation, right? I mean, you're at an event like Vive, you want to be bold. Vive is a particularly bold event. They themselves do bold marketing. So, but then when people are there and they're hospital executives and they're looking for what's behind the hype and the reality. So we were just talking about this morning on LinkedIn, there was a post about none of the booths said improve patient outcomes. Lots of booths said AI, lots of booths said improving.
And if you did have that booth, send us a picture. Right. I'd love to be proven wrong. We'll feature you.
I did spend a lot of time on both floors and I can't say that I read every single booth. So I can't validate it necessarily, but the message is there that the focus is on the what we do and how we do it, not necessarily who we're helping. And so the debate is going on online about, well, is it because the hospitals don't care? They're more focused on cost outcomes or efficiency outcomes. So what's your thought about that? And what do you tell health IT companies that are focused, of course, on the patient, but are making those decisions around what their marketing should be?
Yeah, maybe I have a controversial thought on that. About 3 or 4 years ago, everyone was saying we improve patient outcomes. And the health systems were like, prove it to us, right? And they couldn't, right? Because it's hard. It is hard, especially if you're not getting data feedback back from the health system, which is often it's a one-way transfer, right? Implement the system, onboard it up. We only can see so much data, but it's not connected to system A or system B or billing or except, right? Your exit criteria, your network leakage. They're all different systems, right? So it's really hard for a healthcare software company, I think these days, even the big ones, to say, like, how are we actually improving patient outcomes? Now, that's the ecosystem of the companies and the health systems having to get better integration. But I think that's why a lot of companies steered away from the improved patient outcomes, because the health systems were like, we're sick of hearing this.
There was some clawback. They're like, is it really you who did this? Or is it maybe like the community outreach we did as well?
Yeah.
I remember hearing that, being like, did you really save us all that money? Or was it maybe some other things too?
It was. I think so. And we did hear from health systems for some of our clients. They were like, don't say this. Like, you can't prove it. We don't want to hear it anymore. Everyone's saying they do it. It was like patient-centered medical home, like for a while. Like, oh, nope, you can't prove that. And then like ROI, now they're gone to ROI in the bottom line because the CFOs are involved in a lot of the decisions. So I can understand why the companies went that way and away from the patient outcomes. But at the same time, we can't forget why the health systems are there, right? Mm-hmm. And that the patients are at the top of the list of like why we should care about this. Unfortunately, I think there's a missing link there between the integration companies and the health systems themselves and bilateral sharing of data to really figure out what's working and what doesn't.
Right. Right. They don't always tell them everything. I think too, I like what you're saying here. And I liked also in the book, like you talk about the sales funnel, because like I have a background in sales. So they teach you like top of funnel versus closing. And I like how you talk about like that the role of marketing within that, and also how it's more of a roller coaster. Like, that's relates to what you're saying now with patience. Like, it's a little bit, people went forward with this idea. They were saying, like, maybe they were pretty bold in their claims, which people can be pretty aspirational, I say, in their claims of what they do. But now they're having that comeback. And I think right now we're having this resurgence of like AI, like these general messages go up and down. But also you talked about the funnel. So I wanted you to share more about the funnel, because I like, this is super interesting to me. Yeah.
Sure. So everyone thinks of like the traditional funnel, and it's my book, right? The little funnel. This is the actual funnel. The first one was developed in 1898, and we still use it today. And I say, maybe we shouldn't still use it today, because people don't buy that way. Think of the last time you made a big purchase, car, house, something. You didn't buy in a funnel kind of model, right? You probably said,
no, I bought the blue car.
Right. Yeah. I have a pain point. I need a bigger car. I need a smaller car. I have more kids. Like, right. You're like, I need something, or my car is dying. I need something. And then you did probably some exploration, visited dealerships. You compared, maybe looked at reviews online. So there was exploration and evaluation there. And then eventually you bought, when the pain got too. And so we go through this cycle that's more like this here, right? And it's a roller coaster. And this is from a 2020 Google white paper, actually, where they looked at buyers across B2C, B2C, B2B. And we all kind of buy now in that way. It's a cycle. It's a roller coaster. And there's probably 12 or 15 people in a B2B health tech or biotech decision, right? All going through this roller coaster at different stages of the roller coaster. Some are in the front car going, yay. Some are in the back going, I hate this thing. Right? So we have to convince all of them across a really long nurture cycle of 12 or 18 or 24 months. So marketing across that continuum of awareness is super important. You have to be in front of your prospects continuously.
Yeah. And you mentioned also the amount of content that needs to be put in front of them, right? And the forms of content. So talk about that a little bit. We're sort of in that business, if you will, in that we, from events to white papers, to blogs, to just the social media messages, where has that changed? And where do you think the most interesting things are happening?
Yeah, there's a saying that content is king. I say content is the whole back row of the chessboard in the book, because it's so important. And if you look to failed lead generation or awareness campaigns, 90% of the time it's due to your content, right? You didn't have enough. You didn't have something of quality. You didn't have something you could sign your name to, right? And so you need different pieces of content that can appeal to those 12 different buyers on the buying committee. Some are going to look at an illustration they can read in 5 seconds. Some are going to want to dig more into the tech and read like a white paper that's more detailed, right? So who are the people on your buying committee? What do they like to read? What attention span do they have? And then developing different kinds of content. I love this video content angle you have here, and also interactive. It's something only you can do. That's your point of view. That's what companies need to do. They need to do far more video and far more personalized content that sets out their unique point of view. Like Mike McSherry doing a poem. He wrote that poem, right? Only he could do that poem that mentioned, don't be the next Blockbuster video. And then we took off from that. But that's something really, really unique that will set you apart from the average meh that's out there.
Right. So you have to be unique and good on video. No pressure.
And good on video. Or do some, if you're not comfortable on video, do a book, do an ebook, right. Do a podcast, right?
Like, I like how you just said that. Like, do a book. Just write a book, guys. It's easy.
It's actually a lot easier than you think. This one's sitting on my Google Drive for like 5 years in different chapters.
I don't believe that, because there are like examples from the last 3 years in there. So just saying.
Yeah, but it was, but there was a lot of in here. And then I was like, oh yeah, I got to do case studies from the last couple of years. But if you find a good editor, ghostwriter, and some, you can get this done with not much money and not much time. 6 months maximum, like half time. This is what kept me sane while I was selling my business. It was like I was either doing that or writing the book. I'm like, okay, I'm getting away from due diligence for a while. I'm going to go write the chapter on that. So it's really, really less intimidating once you find someone who can give you a template for how mm-hmm. you should do this and do it well than you think.
Yes. I think there's also like, that's on a lot of people's bucket list. Like writing a book is on like 25% of people's bucket lists. Or maybe it's even higher.
Fabulous. I was really enthused and excited at the reception that the book got at Vibe because it was in our booth and people would come by like, oh my gosh, you have a book. It stood out as something different from everything else there. And in fact, I just got a lead gen meeting from it this morning.
That's amazing.
Right. And so it was something that started a conversation that set our agency up as a thought leader. And it's different. And only I could rank this. AI can't write this.
No, right? I mean, there's a great voice to it. Your experience shows through completely. And I mean, it is so uniquely targeted to this audience. However, I do think there are many principles in there that apply to any B2B marketer, not just health tech. And I think, I guess one question I have for you in that you have worked for and worked with both digital health, but biotech, there's always that discussion, even who should we sell to for some of the digital tech, right? Should we be employer focused, provider focused? Do you have opinions on that? And also any sort of learnings from having clients in the different sectors of healthcare?
Yes, I absolutely do have some thoughts around who you should market and sell to. And those are two different things. You can sell to multiple verticals, but market to only one or two because people find you across. And we're starting to see a lot of confluence of health software companies that sell into pharma or pharma that has a med device, right? And those crossovers there. Right now, as we sit here in recording this in March 2024, the money is certainly easier to find and flow out of pharma than it is out of a health system. So we have a few clients that go across. They sell something into pharma and they sell something into health systems. We're marketing both of those, but there's a little bit different budget allocation favoring pharma right now to some of those companies right. because they're just more well-funded. They have cash flow. And
they have GLP-1s.
It's a shorter sales cycle. It's 8 to 12 months versus 24.
Right, right. Well,
right.
So in our conversation with Mike, he talked about the good things, and his good thing was GLP-1s, which of course are helping a lot of the pharma's bottom line. Not that they needed that much help, but
yeah,
to bring it home.
But also like the pathways, pharma has fewer pathways to know. I just like to say,
right.
It's different. They want different things out of their applications, instruments, software. They want to see a really more technical voice sometimes in there. It has less of the, I don't want to sound that, like it has less of the patient outcome kind of stuff to it. They're interested certainly in positive patient outcomes, but it's set in a different kind of light, right? Mm-hmm. They understand their clinical trial pathway is
right. Vibe. They handle the patient outcome with their tools and
exactly.
technology.
Exactly. Well, they're marketing into pharma. They're like, how do we get through this pipeline faster? How do we get our drugs to market quicker? How do we get our rare disease solution out there quicker and over the regulatory hurdles? That's what they're interested in. That actually is a fun problem to help solve.
So we talked about this a little bit, but you are a female founder. You founded your agency, sold, and now are here. Tell us a little bit. We talk to female founders frequently, and I would just love to hear any kind of major takeaways from that experience and any advice you would give to other female founders out there that are looking to get even investors and or sell their businesses.
Sure. I've loved being a female founder. I wouldn't change it. And people say, would you do it all over again? Yeah, I'd do it over again like 1,000 times. It's been so, so fun and rewarding. And one of the rewarding pieces is 25 years ago when I was pitching clients at biotechs, at health tech, med device, maybe 10% of the buyers were women. Today, it's 70% of the buyers are women, like VP of marketing, CMO, digital marketing managers. So there's been a huge influx of women rising to those positions in their companies, which Excellent. That's fabulous. I would give the advice to be really resilient your first 2 years. Those are the toughest years. Often the first year, you're really excited when you start a company or an agency. There's like, you just have a lot of energy around it. You have a lot of mission and vision driving you. And then the second year comes and you have to pay yourself and people.
Then you realize you have bills still.
You have bills to pay and the mission's like, yeah, it's still important, but like, hey, I got to pay payroll. And so that's the one you really got to grind. So the first year is like, I call it vision, and the second year is grind. And if you can get past that second, third year, then you're usually really golden. That's when most of the businesses fail. Get to that third year, then you're often on a path where you have referrals, you're succeeding, and you don't have to grind as much. But female founders really have to stick up for themselves, especially when they need to get money, when they need to get VC or private equity. You have to be super confident, super well-versed, have your elevator pitch, practice with other female founders. And because you're not going to be pitching a lot of women, unfortunately, in those VC and PE industries. We're seeing some change, but I can tell you, going through PE, you're going to be pitching mostly men. So make sure that you're very comfortable with your pitch and your communication to get across your message and get the money.
I like that. I'd love to hear any other practical tips you have, like with building customer relationships and with sharing your message. Like, there are so many options. Like, we've even talked about like so many different options to write a book. Like, what are practical things to make those decisions?
Yeah, I like having one or two really solid value props. And I know that's probably a little cliche because, yeah, like everyone has value props, but like we have one here in the agency. Like,
everybody does.
We never miss deadlines. We've never missed a deadline in 23 years. You know why? Because I sell a lot for the agency now. And the number one problem I hear with agency is like, my agency misses deadlines all the time. Like, they can't deliver. They can't deliver on time. They take too much hand holding. They don't answer the phone. I'm like, what? No, that's like table stakes. So, but it's a differentiator. So if you can go in with something like that, we're going to implement your health system. We will do it on this schedule. And we guarantee, as long as you're meeting your dates, we meet ours. If you're an agency, you're going to deliver that press release when you said you were going to deliver it, right? So have something like that where you put your stake in the sand and you live by it and die by it, right? It's like, everyone on the team understands it's super important and you don't mess up on that one thing.
I like that.
Yeah, that's an important one. I think the unique value proposition, and that goes back to sort of marketing the basics and the fundamentals. But that's what I love about the book. I mean, I just think that you really get into the basics, but you take it home to sort of digital health and healthcare and B2B in such a way that it's so readable. So tell our audience again how to get the book and where they can find you.
Absolutely. So Stop Starvation Marketing is available on all your major booksellers, including Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So that's the easiest way to find it. And you can also reach out to me on LinkedIn, Chris, C-H-R-I-S, Slocumb, S-L-O-C-U-M-B. You'll find me on LinkedIn. Or you can reach us through our websites, supremeopti.com, OPTI, or clarityqst.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And I can't say enough about the book. I'm thrilled and excited to apply all of it.
It's been so nice to be with you both, Megan and Janae. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Health Impacts Digital Health Talk. Don't miss another podcast. Subscribe at digitalhealthtalks.com. And to join us at our next face-to-face event, visit healthimpactlive.com.